good morning on Tuesday, April 10th, 2012, from San Francisco. You're listening to Brian and Gabe Live. This is Brian Medden. Thank you for joining. Gabe, I hear you there in Omaha. How are you today?
Yeah, not bad. Not bad at all.
Sitting here.
We have a lot of people here today.
We do. So in the rainy city of San Francisco with me in the studio is Jack.
Good morning.
We also have a couple of folks joining us remotely via Skype. So first is Jeff McNaught from Wise. And Jeff, thank you for taking the time to call in today.
Hey, my pleasure. Sorry we couldn't be with you last week.
Yeah. It was a very last minute thing. But thank you. Are you in San Jose right now?
I am. I'm at World Headquarters.
World Headquarters for the time being.
Sounds so important. it's not. Wait, who's World Headquarters?
Wise is World Headquarters. We're still an independent company.
All right. So, and we'll get to that in a second. I just want to mention we also have on the line Eric Westhoven from Maastricht. Did I say that right?
Almost.
In Netherlands. And so we've got a lot of things to talk about today. We'll talk about OnLive, Microsoft's new licensing stuff, MDM, AppV, Jack's new consumerization show. I'll maybe share thoughts about my BlackBerry playbook. I've been using it now. But first, I want to make use of your time, Jeff McNaught, and just talk about, you know, the news that happened last week, which was that Dell was going to be buying Wise. So first of all, that's still happening, right?
Yeah, well, last I checked, it seems to be the talk of the town.
And so how do you guys feel down there? I mean, I wrote to that. I thought it was a brilliant idea, long time, or brilliant's not the right word. I thought it was a good move, sort of a long time coming. Is that the sense that sort of the folks at Wise feel right now?
Yeah, we're really excited about it. I mean, when you look at the way our world worked is that, you know, industry analysts would routinely tell us that when we made it to the shortlist, we'd win 3 out of 4 times against the competitors we face today. And the one time, you know, we couldn't get into the shortlist was because we didn't have an end-to-end solution, right? And that's all solved now.
End-to-end solution being what?
Like servers and
management, storage, networking, software, optimization, and clients.
And then, so I guess this deal, it's a definitive deal, but it has to, is there regulatory approval that has to happen or just customer closing things? Like, when does this actually become a deal that was announced until this is done deal?
Yeah, it's subject to the customary closing requirements. And so we expect it's going to close sometime in mid-May.
Oh, so that's pretty soon.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people have, you know, I'm sure there's not sort of too much stuff that you're able to talk about now because you're, you know, not closed yet and it's a public company and well, Dell is a public company anyway. But so let's ask you the fun questions, like all those big no PC cars that are driving around, are they gonna, you think you'll peel the color forms off those cars and now you know,
it'll say Dell PCs.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, in fact, I was telling my Dell brethren, who, by the way, are amazing people. Everybody that I've worked with from Dell so far in the last crazy couple of months have been spectacular. So I'm really looking forward to this. But they did have one request, and that's take those damn no PC logos off of everything. And so it took me 2 years to put no PC all over everything we do and about 24 hours to take it off.
Oh, because that's
is that amazing.
Off, is that off now?
Yeah. I mean, our monuments are clear, our cars are clear, everything is clear. And we have a new logo that we will be introducing, I don't know, maybe as early as Synergy that we're working with the Dell folks on. So we're really excited about that.
Is the Wise brand going to continue to exist?
You know, I think that both Dell and Wise realize that the Wise brand brings a unique value to the equation. And so there is no, you know, I haven't seen anybody say, you know, it needs to be immediately X'd out and replaced. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to really take all of the very positive things that we've done as Wise and attribute them to now the joint solution that we'll deliver with Dell. And it's going to be great for customers and they're going to be continuing to look for us. So we're going to find ways to make ourselves easier to find.
And that's cool too. So hopefully you don't fall into the Dell naming schemes and, like, you know, the Wise, you know, whatever, Pocket Cloud becomes Pocket Cloud FX 145C3, you know, dash US only or whatever.
You know, Dell has the history though. You know, Dell, they bought Case and they still call it Case. And so, you know, Wise probably has a good chance of being around as a name for a while.
These are super smart people. They know that they didn't buy us just to lay us all off and grab our thin client business. There's so much more to the brand and the company and what we've done. And, you know, and new things like YZMM and Stratus, you know, these new cloud-based technologies that we're developing, these are super valuable things that people don't even know, you know, all the things that they're going to be able to do for our customers, but Dell gets it. So, you know, I think you're going to see the Wyze brand in some shape or form hang around for as long as it makes sense to.
So, and that's the thing, because I know Dell, I mean, obviously all hardware companies are now trying to be more towards software and services and the whole package and that kind of thing. And I know Wyze has been working on, I mean, I assume Wyze's plan was to, you know, you were planning out your future as if you would be an independent company. And I think Wyze also in the past few years has started with sort of, you know, more software side of things. I know that you had software for, you know, accessing sessions from iOS. You have software to convert PCs into thin clients. You bought an MDM company. And there's maybe more stuff in there. I don't know. There's a lot of software in Wyze's stack, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at our employee count, we've got about 500 employees now, which is up pretty substantially from what it was just a year ago. And about 250 of those people are salespeople, 150 are engineers, and 95% of those are software engineers. So when you look across our platform now, we've got a full stack of virtualization software, management software, what we call cloud software, which includes things like ThinOS and Xero and the technologies inside Zenith and things like that. As well as a growing security portfolio. So we're really dramatically building out the products lines like Wyze VDA, Wyze TCX, Virtual Desktop Accelerator, Wyze Device Manager, and we're cloudifying nearly everything. And so Stratus and YZMM are just the first sort of peeks under the tent of new software that you're going to see from us.
And I guess Dell has a lot of other products that might sort of complement that too. So if they can pull those together, because Wyze had a lot of sort of point solutions and different things, like you mentioned TCX and VDA and those kinds of things. So if Dell can actually pull that together with sort of the existing stuff, and I think Dell even announced more acquisitions even since last week, that could actually be something like pretty legit.
Well, I think so. I mean, you know, if you look at Wyze, our strategy, because, you know, think of who we go up against, right? We're the David in the David and Goliath analogy. And how do you beat a company the size of HP? And you know, if you look at the IDC numbers, that's exactly what we did. Worldwide, we've now beat them. And it had to be by delivering tangible differentiation. It wasn't good enough to take, you know, standard reference design hardware and put standard reference design software on it. We had to go the extra mile and develop things like ThinOS and you know, these ultra-secure technologies and, you know, our Zenith product, which we're so, so proud of with our partner Citrix and our P20 for VMware. The thing is that the Dell folks get this, and they are very excited about working with us to take this tangible differentiation strategy and driving it all the way back through the networking technology, the server technology, and the storage technology so that customers are going to get this benefit from Dell that is going to be not only the sum of all the parts, but it's going to be greater than all the parts. And there's going to be things that we're going to build into the thin clients that are going to take advantage of what we get from Dell so that this end-to-end solution that Dell's going to provide is not just end-to-end like everybody else. It's going to be truly best of breed end-to-end. And that's what excites me because, you know, I'm a geek. It's got to geek out and it's got to be better than anybody else for me to get excited about it.
Huh. What if Michael Dell now buys Teradici? We talked last week about Cisco buying Teradici to make up for potentially losing a partnership with Wyze for Cisco's thin clients. But if Dell buys Teradici, put some hardware chips into these devices and also into the backend storage and blades and everything, switches, all that stuff. Now you got something.
I think that's interesting. I don't have any information that I wouldn't share here. So, but here's what I do know is that we're doing something really interesting with Teradici that we're going to uncover the covers on that I think is going to change the dynamic of that space. So, you know, stay tuned on that one. And,
is that like a synergy thing?
It's not a synergy thing.
It's a Bradford Europe thing.
Something amazing for synergy, but it's a VMworld thing.
Oh, goddamn VMworld. I mean, I love VMworld, but how about make it a Bryforum thing?
Hey.
You know, if it was done in time, Brian, I'd be right there waving the flag.
Well said. So, you know, one of the things last weekend, I know you're sort of a product and market sort of guy, but what is, I mean, Wyze sold through the channel, right? And Dell, I'm not on the channel side. Does Dell, like, their whole thing was their direct, right? Like, does Dell sell through the channel or will Wyze continue to work with the channel? Like, how's that happen?
you know, that's one of the areas where I learned a whole lot here in the last couple of months, is that, you know, it blew me away to find out that Dell has 100,000 channel partners, happy channel partners selling the Dell product, you know, and us little Ys, you know, we've got 3,000 rabid dogs in the channel, you know, doing our thing. So we're going to combine the channel. All of the Ys channel partners are going to be given the opportunity to join the Dell channel program. But, you know, Dell is actually a great channel company, and I didn't know it, and a lot of people have asked me that very question, but I've been surprised, and I think the channel, you know, the feedback we've gotten from the channel is they're delighted because now they've got more to sell.
Well, so, most people probably go that route for the same reason that most people buy their own Dell computers direct, and HP operates the same way, but, you know, you still, when it comes down to buying stuff for enterprises, you're still calling up your partners to or, you know, your channel reps and getting your product that way. So that makes sense.
Especially in small and medium business. You have to do it that way because there's just so much complexity to some of these solutions. If you're a small business, you can't expect the one or two people you may have in IT to be able to do it. So a channel partner is critical to that.
We used to have, when I had a real job, we used to have direct Dell contacts that we would call for stuff. And I would assume that larger clients, larger Wyze clients had the same thing, right, where they could just go direct to Wyze.
We were the software and peripherals, you know, offering through Dell. You know, Dell is, you know, if you didn't know this, Dell is one of our largest reseller partners for the last 3 or 4 years. They sold more Wyze branded thin clients than any other of our partners. And so this is sort of a natural combination as well. But prior to that, you know, Wyze was a big Dell shop, right? We bought all our servers and storage and products directly from Dell as a medium business, and it worked out great for us.
Now, Jeff, you mentioned that Dell has 100,000 happy partners. And then you also mentioned that, you know, all the employees at Dell you met were super awesome. So all 100,000 Dell employees are also super awesome, which statistically speaking is very amazing. So congratulations to Dell for having 100,000 awesome employees. So there's a lot of really good things going on. You're obviously very excited. But, like, what do you guys got to look out for? I mean, how does – you know, some mergers are huge successes and some big mergers are giant catastrophes. So how – you know, what do you guys need to look out for to not fuck this up?
I think that first off, you know, we're in the planning stages right now. So I'm working very closely with my very awesome Dell counterparts in communications, in global online, and in marketing. Those are the sort of the three areas that I run. And we're building out the plans right now for what happens on day one, which is sort of the name you give the day that the closing occurs, as well as, you know, what we do for the next 30, 60, 90 days after that. So that's what we're doing today, is we're really planning for the future and we're building it together. The nice thing is that this isn't that kind of acquisition where one steel company buys another steel company and tries to figure out who they can lay off to maximize profits. Dell gets the fact that what we offer in the market is going to be repositioning them immediately to the leader in desktop virtualization, and they want to make the most of that. The Dell folks already have said they're going to pour additional resources into us at Wyze, including my department in terms of headcount and dollars and all those things that we need to do to double and double again our revenue. And that's exactly where we're going. So there are certainly some pitfalls, right? We've got to make sure we keep our key partners, Citrix, VMware, and Microsoft Virtualization, really happy. We want to make sure our OEM customers like Cisco are really happy. And we're going to preserve all of that to the best of our ability.
I think we're having some Skype issues. Let me ask you the final thing. You know, you talk about employees, and it's not like they bought you to lay people off. Tarkin, so Tarkin is Dell's CEO. For those who've seen him speak, he's a nut in the awesome way. He is, if I were CEO of a company, he is exactly who I would want to be. So I don't know what his deal is and time frames and all that kind of stuff. But from my standpoint, the longer you hang on to that guy, the better. So put my vote in for him sticking around. Because if he could be at Dell and do what he does now for Dell, for Wyze, that'd be fun to watch. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. One clarification. You said he was Dell's CEO.
Oh, sorry.
I think Michael might be a little bit disappointed with that. He's Wyze's CEO, and he now reports to, or will, you know, sort of post-close, report to Jeff Clark, right, the president of End User Computing, and I'll continue to report to Tarkin. So, you know, this thing is organized for success. Trust me.
Awesome. So, hey, I know that we've already taken as much your time as we told you we would. I don't know if you have any other final thoughts, but otherwise we'll let you go and get to it. And Well, is Wise going to be at the Microsoft Management Summit next week? I don't know if that's something that's in your wheelhouse.
I think, yeah, we are. I personally will not be there, but we Wise will be there. And I got to tell you, Synergy is going to be a huge freaking blowout. It's our last major show as an independent company. I've got some product introductions that are going to change everything, and I couldn't be more excited.
All right, and so and what I'm reading between the lines is you're going to give hints of those product awesomeness at Bri Forum in London 2 weeks before Synergy, right?
Maybe.
It's the other way around. They're going to hint at it at Synergy 2 weeks before Bri Forum in London.
Yeah.
And then release the stuff in Bri Forum in
London. Oh, that's right. Oh, that's right. Synergy's first. Oh, whoops. Yeah, hey, well, so Jeff McNaught, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. As I said, I'll say again, you know, congrats on this acquisition. I think this is a good move for both companies, and I wish you the best of luck.
Hey, thanks, Brian. Thanks, Gabe. You guys have been, you know, amazing in your support for Wise, and we think you guys are top notch. So, you know, we will be continuing to work together. We'll just have a slightly different colored logo over our head. So
don't.
All right.
Do not let them change your official cupcake provider.
Yes.
Yeah. We will make sure we fix that as well.
Okay. Right, circle jerking complete. Go. Let's moving on.
Bye.
Yeah. Thanks. So check this out. I'm going to send you a Twitter link right now, twitter.com/KatoyaTT. So you on the phone don't know this. So so my boss or boss's boss somewhere, Mike Katoya, has just joined. He's a tech target
did
guy.
Did he join when you said circle jerk or shortly before?
He doesn't have a microphone, so we're safe there. But he's in Boston. And he's visiting the office. But this is the he is a corporate Twitter guy now. So he just wanted to come in and kind of like, you know, see our show and kind of like see what it is. You know, I said, oh, pop in there. Let's see. I'm going to go through his Twitter right there. 10 Tech Targets ROI Summit this Thursday, the Newton Marriott. Oh, that's from March 30th. Dude, it's been like 10 days since he tweeted. So
the Mike Tyson one?
The Mike Tyson one. Met these guys, bachelor party or something. Oh, wait, you've got a picture of you with Mike Tyson.
He tweeted it about us.
Oh, holy shit. wow, wait, let me...
not bad, huh, for a beginner?
So if I use this word... Am I going to use the word properly? You tell me. That is legit.
Is that
right? Wicked.
Wicked.
Wicked awesome.
Yeah.
Wicked awesome. Boston.
So anyway, well, thanks for letting us do the show.
Well, great show.
Anyway, so we can move it along. So Michael will just kind of be like hanging out here in the background. But so Eric, are you was that you doing dishes in the background earlier, or was that you, Gabe?
I don't think it was me. Maybe. I don't know.
You're out there now, Eric, yeah?
Yeah, it suddenly wasn't me.
All right. So, you know, Eric, you emailed us a while ago, and let's see where that email. What did you write? You said, "You've got opinions about why Microsoft refuses to give Windows 7 SPLA and what you're doing about it." And I guess as a lead-in to this conversation, certainly we've talked about on live quite a bit over the past 6 or 7 shows. So we don't have to rehash all of that, but I'll just sort of put, let's see, I'm not good at the multitasking here. On live, there's our link. Okay, let me put a link to the on live story if you haven't seen that yet. That is that on live sort of caved, I guess, and gave in to Microsoft and has switched their offering to use Server 2008. Instead of Windows 7, since when they were offering Windows 7 desktops, they were very clearly violating Microsoft's license. And incidentally, I know Guy is on the is in the chat. I listened to the show with Guy actually as I was running a couple days ago, and I don't know if I missed this as the show was actually happening, but I love. I mean, Guy. First of all, I've never met Guy in real life, but he just reminds me of John Oliver from The Daily Show, like with the voice. And he's like, yes, the reason that they are doing – the only reason we're doing this is they can do that is because it's illegal. And then Guy was talking about starting his own company, Desktops On Demand, specifically to flagrantly violate Microsoft's license agreements. And when asked about success, he says, well, we assume that it's going to be sued like crazy because what we're doing is clearly illegal. It's just a fun whole situation. So part of me is a little bit sad now that OnLive has sort of, you know, given in to the licensing demands. Yeah. And I hope this isn't over in some ways, you know, because it was just really fun to watch this sort of thing. A couple of quick notes, by the way. I do not believe for an instant that OnLive actually changed the technology or changed anything they are doing in the way that they deliver desktops. I'm sure it's probably still one-to-one. It's just that they're using, you know, the Server 2008 kernel instead of the Windows 7 kernel. And
yeah, and I'm sure it's still their protocols and their broker and all of that stuff. It's just that the OS can be licensed as a SPLAW. Interesting, though, is that Microsoft – did you see this? And I can't find it right now, but Microsoft actually released a statement saying they're happy to see that OnLive has changed and they will be reevaluating their whether or not they're doing something legitimate or not. So the way I interpreted that was that Microsoft is not exactly 100% behind them yet. They're still getting a check and make sure that they're doing something legitimate.
See, I feel like this is all for show. I mean, I love what Simon Bramfitt wrote in the comment when he just said flat out, you know, I'm sure this is something where they went back and forth and Microsoft was like, look, man, just change it to server and we'll leave you alone and we can all move on our way.
Yeah, we won't even charge anymore. Just
yeah, I mean, well, and so and that's what's interesting because what OnLive's desktop offering, the OnLive desktop as a service, I think was it Dennis that pointed this out in the comments? I mean, pointed out that, you know, even them selling this desktop at $5 a month, like that's cheaper than the SPLAW price from Microsoft. So there's still something going on because this is not like they just knocked on Microsoft's front door and said, please, we want, you know, 10,000 SPLAW licenses and now we're going to resell these, because they're selling them, for as far as we can tell, cheaper than Microsoft provides them to any other partner for.
There's I was trying to, it was from Bridget's article. Bridget Botello at Search Virtual Desktop wrote a post today where she actually like dug in and got quotes and tried to talk to Microsoft and OnLive and stuff. So let me find the chat room window again and I'll post that in there.
There we go. But what was interesting about this though is the conversation about OnLive. So I'm a little bit excited that it isn't dead. So even though OnLive now has you know, switch over to server and become, that's my coffee butt belly that's you guys are hearing in your headphones. So even though OnLive has like they have come you know, in license compliance, the conversation on the website turned into about, hey, why isn't there Windows 7 SPLA, which is exactly what sort of my big complaint was in the first place, and that's what we want to talk to Eric about. So Eric, you know, you wrote an email that you had some ideas and thoughts on this, and you're doing some interesting things around it. So I'm just curious about where your head is around this right now.
Yeah, Brian, what happened was that especially Guy and yourself were doing a lot of shouting against Microsoft and why Microsoft was refusing Windows 7 SPLA while the hosting providers were asking for that. And some other stuff actually went on because I contacted the guys like Ruben Sprite and, of course, Giz, and asked them if they could help me to make a legitimate matter of why do we want Windows 7 instead of Windows 2008. Because we can do Windows 2008, we can use the Citrix tools to make it look like Windows 7, and then it looks like Windows 7, so the end customer who's working on that image doesn't notice that he's working on a Windows 2008 server instead of a Windows 7 desktop. So it doesn't make sense to stop companies from doing Windows 7 desktops in the cloud and still allowing them to rebuild Windows 2008 servers to look like desktops. They have a very interesting licensing model for that, for the SPLA, because Microsoft is talking about instances. And if you really look about the Microsoft licensing, and I went through this with a huge customer that we are working on that is going to provide millions of desktops in the cloud, and we actually figured out that we can buy a data center license for $100 a month, and we can still license hundreds of thousands of desktops without even paying for additional licensing. Specifically because Microsoft talks about instances and our technology doesn't use instances because we only have one image. Even when 100,000 end users connect to a desktop, we still have one image. So it doesn't make sense. And I was asking guys, why does Microsoft allow us to use Windows 2008 server? Looks like Windows 7 desktop. So the end user experience is the same, but they don't allow us to use Windows 7 under SPLA. And last year I was working with a German company doing 170,000 desktops on premise. And during the testing and benchmarking of the software, we saw a couple of things. And two of those things were tremendously important in this one. So I asked one of the guys from Microsoft, is this in place? And he did not confirm it, but he absolutely didn't disagree. If people are going to do Windows 7 desktops, then they can use Windows, they can use VMware View to clone those desktops. They use Xen Desktop. But actually, if you need to do Windows 2008 server, you can't use VMware View, because VMware View cannot clone Windows 2008 desktops, customize them so that the end user can connect on them. So actually what Microsoft is doing right now, because they're refusing Windows 7 SPLA, is trying to beat VMware in the biggest market that's going on right now. That's the hosting providers.
Well,
so it's all about the hypervisor.
That is the most unique tinfoil hat theory about this, but I'll take it. I mean, I love a good conspiracy theory. So what you're saying, the idea that since VMware View cannot use server desktops as desktop, it cannot broker and clone and all that stuff with desktops, that Microsoft and Citrix desktop platforms, they could switch over to using the server OS, make it look like a desktop, no problem. But since VMware can't do that, that sort of locks desktop hosting providers out from using VMware View.
I think we had our new soapbox.
Again, it's Microsoft Citrix versus VMware, because everybody knows that VMware is the most used hypervisor in the hosting world. So how do you beat them? By refusing Windows 7 SPLA, because in that case, VMware can be a player in the desktop market.
I love it. I loves me a good conspiracy theory. So let me ask this. So Microsoft have always said that everything they do, they are listening to customers, and it's all based on customer demand. And when you ask them about why there is no SPLA for Windows 7, they say, you know, that they're listening to the market. So my question is, what do we have to do as a community in order to sort of get them to listen? Like, you would think that all the fervor over this and the comments and everything would be enough. But, you know, I don't know. Is this a voting with our wallets kind of thing? I mean, clearly the whole world is not going to move over to Linux or something like that. So they are sort of a monopoly. So maybe it doesn't matter. But, I mean, do you think that there's anything we could actually do as a community to say, hey, Microsoft, we want this. You should do this now. Or have we already done that?
We can do the same thing that OnLive did.
Well, right, and the guy Buell is doing now, right?
The biggest gag about OnLive, the biggest gag about OnLive, did OnLive change this desktops to Windows 2008? Everybody thinks yes, because they're looking at Windows Help, they are starting the applications and trying to figure out, and it shows Windows 2008 R2. But if I log on with my iPad to the OnLive desktop and I know my tools, I definitely see Windows 7 underneath it. So did OnLive really change to Windows 2008? No, they made it appear, they made it look like Windows 2008. You still log on to the Windows 7 desktop.
Can't you type in like
Love to see that article, like the proof of that, like showing that. Because, I mean, sure, I guess you could go in and res-hack the bitmap that shows the, you know, the when you go to help about, it shows Windows 2008 instead of Windows 7. But
if you go to help about, it only shows you a CHM file. So you can change that, and you can change the logon screen, and you actually can change.
It's absolutely possible. I mean, yeah, I'm
can't
not
you type in
that.
Like
so this is the exact reverse.
I could show you Windows 7 desktop that looks like Windows 3.1.
Yeah, but can't
you see the difference?
Type in. I'm sorry, my Windows commands are vague now. But can't you type in like VER from the command prompt and it tells you what version of Windows or like sysinfo?
Or not.
And even that can be changed because Windows 2008 and Windows 7 sharing
some,
the same
at some point,
isn't
it,
structure layer.
But now, hang on. Isn't this like faking the moon landing? Like, I believe it was more work to fake the moon landing than it would actually be to go to the damn moon. And so at some point with all these loopholes, isn't it easier? Because if they treat Windows 2008 just like Windows 7, and they can use they can take off all the crap they don't need and put their apps on and the look and feel. I mean, isn't that just like a day or two of work to do it versus how many days of hacking? It would seem like to go to Windows Server 2008, especially because these are non-persistent desktops. I mean, so would it be that? I mean, I don't know. It doesn't seem like Windows 2008 would be that hard to just actually. It'd be easier to move to Windows 2008 than it would be to fake it.
If you have to build a Windows 2008 image like the way that OnLive did, it's going to cost you about 2 to 3 days. If you're going to tweak the existing Windows 7 image to look like Windows 2008, it takes you about an hour.
But why? But this company has 2 to 3 days to have some junior engineer working on that. The other thing, too, is remember, like Jack pointed out earlier, well, to me, not on the show, about how they found this, like with the handwriting. Remember?
Yeah.
A keyboard. Yeah. It was the keyboard change. And so there were features, there are touch features in Windows 7 that are not in 2008. And then that's how the OnLive desktop users discovered the difference.
Yeah, so it feels like they are using. I mean, like, yeah, I don't know. Let's take that as an open issue to discuss later. To poke around. And Eric, anything you're doing that can sort of prove that it's 2000? That it's actually Windows 7? I would love that. I'm not going to buy off on that on this one right now, but I do love still the idea though about Microsoft's SPLA I do love the conspiracy theory of Microsoft doing that to screw VMware. I don't know whether
that's the only thing that makes sense. It doesn't make sense at all.
Yeah. All right.
Well, other than Microsoft, just
can tell me why it makes sense, it doesn't.
Yeah, here's why. Because Microsoft feels that they can make more money without a SPLA license than they can with it. I mean, whatever their models are in the back end, it's not, you know, we're not the ones that see those. We don't know what those are. So believe me, if Microsoft felt like they could make more money by having a SPLA license for Windows 7, they would do it.
So an interesting thing, John in the chat window, and I don't know what John this is. A few lines up said they refused to offer Windows Client via SPLA before VMware had any real significance. So that's
right. They've been towing that line for many, many years. And it's fun, and it's in the face of Citrix. Citrix has an SPLA license or service provider, I guess, license for Zen Desktop. I mean, I think they were working on one for VDI in a box too. I'm sure Guy will correct me if I'm wrong on that, but. The people that build upon these Windows products have SPLA licenses, and they're just kind of waiting for Microsoft to have it so that they can use it.
Well, I mean, so, you can still use it if the customers bring their own license too, which is always.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. All right, let's. I don't know if anyone in the chat room has anything that I feel like I'm done with talking about this now. We can move on to. I don't know. Any final thoughts, Gabe, Jack, Eric?
Guy wonders if Joe Motz is listening. Maybe we can get Joe Motz on the show next week.
I don't know who
that
Joe
would
Motz.
Be cool.
Joe's the head licensing guy at Microsoft.
He's the one that wrote Microsoft's blog post like a month ago.
Well, you know, I'll ask them. I mean, like, so the MVP lead when I, you know, retired, as they call it, said if you ever need anything, reach out. And clearly reaching out via the MVP program never did anything. But I've also got a contact at their PR agency who always says, hey, reach out to us if you need anything. So
isn't that kind of like when you break up with somebody and you're like, well, we'll still be friends?
Oh, right? Yeah. Yeah. And then you call. It's like, hey, want to hang out now that we're friends? And they're like, oh, that was.
I didn't really mean that. Work, though. Watch it work now that you're not an MVP.
Yeah.
Well, like, oh, yeah, Joe. Yeah, he'd love to talk to you.
Well, maybe. Maybe not. Yeah, I don't have any NDAs with them. So, all right. Let's move on. So, Gabe, last week you wrote about Microsoft's user environment virtualization.
Yeah, I sure did.
This is EUV.
EUV?
Is that what it is?
UEV.
UEV.
It sounds French. Yeah, yeah, UEV. So, it was one of those things that there was a lot of, fanfare for it, right? So everybody's like, wow, this is happening. Microsoft has this now. And then once you boil it down, you're like, wow, we had this before.
Wait. So what is this you're talking about?
Well, this is user environment virtualization, right? Not everybody knows what UEV is.
So this is like Microsoft's version of AppSense or Res.
Yeah, it's exactly it. And so once we take a look at it, though, and we see that this is, I mean, when I look at it, I see Flex profiles in 2008, right? I see basically being able to create an XML file that will redirect file and registry changes during in a user's profile during their session to a file that is accessed by specific applications during sessions. I actually hear a funny echo. That's why I'm kind of pausing, because I think that somebody else is talking and it's me. So the idea here, though, is that it's not a system-wide thing. So the Flex profile solution, that would actually process those changes at log on and log off. And then, in this situation, the UEV solution is actually tied to specific applications. So Office, for instance, has its own set of user environment settings. And so when you deploy Office, you can deploy it with these settings. And that way, the settings and the applications are portable. And so that's the big difference here, is that it's more granular. Now, that said, that kind of granularity, kind of, I guess, exists with other solutions, too.
Hey, are you Justin, there? Do you still hear Gabe? Hello?
Am I gone?
Wait, I can't hear. Jack, can you hear me?
I'm not hearing you in my headphones.
All right. So, Justin, whatever you did, I don't know if you turned something down in the studio, but turn it back up. In the meanwhile,
all right.
I will just
you guys should argue. Gabe is talking.
I will just kill some time. So, I can't hear anything.
Wait,
back on the Microsoft stuff, John wrote an interesting comment.
Can you hear me still?
Okay, so Brian and I can't hear anybody here in the studio.
Justin, can you still hear us when we're talking? I can hear everybody. I didn't touch anything. Hey, Gabe, can you still
hear
us? Give us my finger in the Skype if you can hear us, Gabe.
I can hear you guys. Let's see. I will say...
It looks like you're talking. I can't hear you.
Nothing changed. So, let's see. Chat room.
I guess that means... Oh, Gabe, I can't hear anything. I can hear no one. Like, my headset was just unplugged.
I'm not asking. Yeah, I'm asking this. We hear. They can hear. They can hear everyone. All right. Yeah. I can hear everyone. And the chat room attendee number is going down. All right. So I will just continue with user environment virtualization.
Usually you should go to the commercials, guys.
Yeah, really. We need a technical difficulties thing. So anyway, I guess the idea with the user environment virtualization is that they've made it granular and effectively eliminated the need for roaming profiles in a lot of situations. I don't know, Eric, were you paying attention to that, since this is like the Eric and Gabe show at this point? Were you paying any attention to the whole release announcement, any of that?
Yeah, I paid a lot of attention to it, because that's also affecting the VDI desktop space that we're working in. Roaming profiles isn't the best thing to do in a VDI desktop, and especially if you're doing non-persistent desktops, you need something like that. But the end-user virtualization that Microsoft brings now is old wine in new bottles. So we take a very bad wine from 1981 or 82, and we put them in a new bottle, and we put a tag on it 2012, and look, we got something new.
Well, it's better than the old wine that Microsoft had, I guess.
Yeah, but actually, if you really looked into it, and it was already mentioned, there's nothing more than Flex profiles.
No,
and it's
no,
a cool way they
right.
did it. It's absolutely a very cool way how they did it. But I did Flex profiles for years working as a Citrix administrator that I did for years. And Flex profiles ruled. And this is so Flex profiles.
Yeah, very much. And that was what kept coming to mind, except for the difference that being the granularity that you get by tying it to specific applications. And so, but that what that goes across platforms, and it goes across delivery methods too. So you can tie the personalization to the application on whatever operating system it's deployed on, whether it's VDI, RDS, traditional desktops, whether it comes via AppV. And so all of those, that does give an added bit of flexibility compared to, you know, Flex Profiles a la 2008. But there's still, so it could probably work in many organizations that don't have some other solution. But the other guys, I mean, AppSense, RES, Immedio, Sense, Tricerat, everybody. There's 20 of them. All of these guys, I don't think that they have a whole lot to worry about at this point, because they were already going to customers that needed a little bit more anyway. I do think, though, that it will free them up to not focus so much on the basic features. You know, like RES has this, I forget what their product name was called, they have a light version that they've been giving away for free. And so that is that's the kind of thing. They've been giving it away for free because they knew that UEV was coming out. But I don't know if they even need to focus on products like that so much anymore. They should just focus on the more advanced products, and maybe even decoupling the settings from the user experience even more. Imagine taking that stuff off to the cloud. You know, imagine taking my Office personalization settings that from Office installed locally and using them in Office 365. I think that's the next step to take this stuff to.
Hey, this is Brian. I'm back.
Excellent.
We're back here. So I don't know what that was. It appears we did nothing. The main mixer for this thing, because we have a multi-channel mixer with lots of auxiliary buses, so we can route the audio from Skype and all this stuff together. We bought that on eBay.
Well, there's your
maybe
problem.
It's time for a new one. I don't know. And I guess I missed the last bit of the conversation, so I'm not going to try to comment. You're still talking about the user environment virtualization.
We were just talking about, yeah. I mean, Eric agrees that it's a lot like Flex Profiles, yeah. And then I went on to say how you know, it's more granular than that. I mean, I agree, like conceptually, the way that it works is, but the fact that you can bundle it with applications across different delivery methods is cool, because you can now bundle the personalization settings for Office, say, for delivery as a traditional or VDI or RDS or even AppV. And so it's portable across all of that stuff, which is cool. I like that. But then there's all these other more advanced solutions out there as well. So what I ended on was, I think that this frees up, this solves problems for people that don't already have a solution in place. And it also, I think, lightens the load on the user virtualization ISVs, so that they can now focus on bigger and badder things instead of on the kind of low level.
Which they have. So you know who screwed on this then is, it's not Res and AppSense, but it's the small sort of more point solution. So I'm thinking like the Flex Profiles or Immedio, like Immedio Flex, and they're I guess the big one that comes to mind. Who else are some of these?
I honestly haven't used Flex in a while, so I don't know if Flex is more advanced now than it was 3-4 years ago. Maybe it is. Maybe there's more management associated with it or something. Maybe there's more powerful, you know, tools with it. I don't know. So it would be interesting to hear what Immedio's take is on it. But yeah, I feel like, though, that it frees these guys up. I ended on saying, you know, wouldn't it be cool if you could take your Office personalization settings from your local environment and then still use those same settings and personalization on Office 365 in the cloud or on really any other platform like that. And I feel like we've talked about that in the past. I think that this actually frees up resources in these companies to pursue that a little bit more.
All right. So
actually, you gave me a very good idea to enhance our cloud portal to add that functionality to it. Sorry.
Well, there we go.
I truly believe that you are absolutely right. Exporting your Office settings from your Office PC onto your iPad or your Android tablet to customize your Office 365. That's absolutely a cool idea.
Well, cool. Glad that could help. and I mean, obviously, there's more things move off in that direction as well. I hear quiet again on the Brian and Jack front. Are you guys still there?
We're fading in and out here, or rather, right. The sound that we're getting in our headsets is fading in and out. So we'll do the best we can.
Yeah, well, it's just the auxiliary
bus.
Should
we just call this?
Oh, sorry. It's just the auxiliary bus going to our headphones in the studio. Justin hears us fine. Internet's fine. So I'm going to blame the mixer because it's just literally fading in and out as Justin's hands are up in the air. I'm not touching it. Anyway, I can kind of we can hear sometimes. So I
so us. All right, so we will have this fixed, Jack. We may have to put off our consumerization podcast, nah. But now is a good time to talk about that.
Yeah, so let's right. We can wrap a little bit early, but Jack. First of all, did you pick a name for the show, Jack?
We did pick a name. Carl and I spoke yesterday, and we picked the name of Consumerization Nation. It has a nice rhyming ring to it. We're going to be here Thursday morning at 10 o'clock Pacific, 1 o'clock Eastern.
Assuming the mixer works.
Yeah,
we'll
yeah.
Fix it.
But we'll have a chance to hash out all of these. I imagine a lot of subjects will end in rehashing some usual subjects, just as on this show they do, except there our subjects will be our soapboxes will be managing or not managing mobile devices, that's the biggest one.
Yeah, and you know that was something that came up this week, where Gabe. Well, I know Gabe. There's a couple of things to talk about, but I tweeted an article by Natalie Lambert from Citrix, and I'll just pop this article into the. I'll pop her article into the chat. And she was basically saying, like, hey, you can have secure enterprise mobility without device wipe, which I agree with 100%. Now, when you read the article, she says that, yes, because you can use the Citrix receiver and have remote apps, like remote Windows apps. And that's where I was saying, so I like this concept. I don't agree with the technology because or the product because it should be. And then she started telling me, no. Receiver with Cloud Gateway, it's about more than Windows apps. It also does SaaS apps and web apps. And I'm like, yeah, but those aren't device native. And then for device native, they're like, oh, we'll have to talk under NDA. So
this is where I was writing last week an article. We wrote about the Symantec acquiring Nucona. Nucona, of course, being a mobile device or mobile application management vendor that manages the mobile applications natively, obviously. But where I was saying that the Cloud Gateway package would be really cool if it had that component in it as well.
They'll actually manage like native iOS and Android apps, right?
Yeah. So you can build your own app store. You can wrap security stuff around them. You can pull individual applications off of devices and wipe application level data.
Yeah, and so when I was going back and forth with Natalie via Twitter, they kept on, like I said, she kept on saying SaaS, and I'm like, no, I'm not talking about web apps. I'm not. And then she said, well, we can touchify Windows apps, which so can log me in. I mean, that's nothing, but.
They're probably also talking about the Golden Gate stuff where they can kind of redesign Outlook so that it has a more native looking interface with the, I forget what they call it, their mobile application development kit or something. So they have a couple of different angles for this, none of which results in a native app at this point. Are you there?
Yes. We hear you at like volume 1 out of 100. So if we're very, very quiet and push the headphones all the way into our ears, we can just barely hear you.
Okay.
But I imagine this is something though that, so clearly, I mean, it's obviously Citrix, the way they're talking, I'm sure they're going down that path. I'm sure VMware is going down that path with Horizon. This is in our book, we talk about like, this is the future to have integrated SaaS, web, Windows, and device native apps.
Right, and this is I said that this was interesting because with the ShareFile component of Citrix Receiver, that it has the option to open your files in device native applications. That's sort of the first step in saying, "Hey, go do something that doesn't even involve a Windows desktop at all," and that it feels kind of like that's the first time we're hearing a story like that. Am I not? Is that so, or do you agree?
First time hearing it from Citrix.
From Citrix, yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, obviously with Synergy coming up next month, we'll hear, a lot more about that.
Yeah, it's almost like having ShareFile as a part of Citrix Receiver, opening documents on device native apps. That's opening up a bit of a Pandora's box of non-Windows device native application worlds.
And that gets into the whole device management versus application management, which I think is, Gabe, is that what I asked you with, I don't know if I can hear your answer, but is that what you were writing about, Gabe, when you wrote about, MDM, mobile device management, kind of going towards like general device management?
What I was getting to there was just that all of these things, there's going to be such a mixture out there that the having a fragmented solution where you use this to manage one thing and this to manage another, excuse me, is just going to be more complicated as time goes by. So that's where I think that the consolidation is going to happen. Companies like Citrix, they need a version 2, right? They need to have a what happens in a post-PC era kind of path planned out. And so I think that companies like Citrix are going to be looking for other things that they can do. And so like Jack just said, we've got this Pandora's box that's opened up now with being able to open documents that are stored, the Follow Me data, being able to open documents in native apps. But how the hell do you manage and policy those native apps? And so I think there's going to be a little bit associated with that too. But we have to do it in a way that's not intrusive and not taking over people's devices.
And so Gabe, the other parts of your of what you wrote though was that for the people that do want to do the traditional style device management, something like Symantec acquiring Odyssey, the MDM vendor, that side of it will be more of a business as usual. We're managing devices. Now people use mobile devices, so we can manage those too.
Yeah, and that's why I speculated Landesk is one of these people too, because again, it's just, you know, when I think about the processes that people go into to manage these things, it's just, you know, you get a help desk call, the help desk has to manage something. Do I use Landesk to do this? Do I go into this app to do this? How do I manage that specific device? And so that's why you see this different consolidation going on. That's why BMC bought Numara, which bought MDM application, there's a lot of consolidation going on right now with the big management companies kind of absorbing these other solutions.
But why do you want to manage those devices? It's like Henry Ford told us in the beginning of the cars he built. He said you can choose any color if it's black. So now we're going to allow companies to do a bring your own device so that everybody can buy his own device, an iPad or an Android tablet, or who cares?
So all these companies
trying to manage those. If you look at the Dynamics offerings, what we did is we are not want to manage those devices. We simply say this device is for the end user. If the end user want to do his work on it, we allow him to do his work on it. But we, as a company, we can tell you what you can do on that device, yes or no. So we build the HTML5 portal that allows you to do your applications, your data, and your desktops from a single browser without even having to install a single bit on your device. And it doesn't matter if it's a Playbook or an Android tablet or an iPad. But a company decides what you can do. So if the company decides this is a bring your own device, and we can see that on a MAC address, we do not allow you to store your data locally on that device. So if that device is getting stolen, there's no data on it because you're not allowed and you're not able to put your data on that device instead of trying to manage that device. Because if I'm going to buy my personal iPad and my company says, Eric, I want to manage your iPad, I say, hell no.
Yeah, yeah. So
I bought it.
Hang on. I get that. The thing is, so right now, all of these, the only way that, you know, mainstream companies can tell users you can use any device is if you are providing all the applications via HTML5 or like remoted Windows interfaces. So I believe that everyone is on board. Don't manage the device, just manage the apps and the access.
Even I am. Even having written that article, I'm on board with that as well. The thing is that these companies have to be doing, they feel like they have to be doing something. And it's, so we talk about this post-PC era when we're getting away from managing those things, but people are using more and more other things. These companies that manage devices, that their entire existence is about managing devices, are looking for what can they do. And so while I don't agree that that's the best way to handle it, that's why these companies are doing
Agreed.
That, because they're looking for the next thing to manage.
Yeah,
I'm not saying it's a good idea. No, I'm just saying that's what's going to happen.
Right, because MDM is – like the only reason we did desktop management the way we did 15 years ago is that's all we knew how to do. And this is sort of like the same person who's like stuck in a rut. It's like the – did you ever watch those new Brady Bunch movies where Tom Brady, the architect – or Mike Brady, I mean the architect, you know, he was
still building the same houses?
Yeah, like he's like, look at this grocery store I designed. It was his house with like a fruit stand in front. And then he's like, look at the gas station. It was his house with the gas station canopy. So I think that's what, like, when you see the land desks and the, you know, even System Center, it's the same way. You know, we see the System Center of the worlds, you know, that they look at System Center, hey, we can manage Windows devices now too. It's very anachronistic. That's why
we're interested in things like mobile application management. And we Jack and I actually talked to somebody called a company called MobiliSafe last week that I'm sure we'll get into on our Thursday podcast a little bit more. But they actually sit, it works. The Exchange is the best example of, or actually Exchange is the only thing they work with right now. But they actually watch all the traffic coming into Exchange and can classify and identify specific devices based on the like signatures of the traffic coming in, and then they tie that to a user in AD, and then you can actually policy whether or not this device has access to Exchange based on what they learn about that device just by the network traffic.
Right.
So they know whether it's iOS 5.1 or 5.0 or whether it's been jailbroken or that kind of a thing. And so it's a very non-intrusive way of policying access to data without actually having anything to do with the device at all.
It's a high level sophisticated type of application level management, and Exchange being the particularly good target to go to because it's the one that everybody has, and you know, this isn't a problem that you can solve by putting security around your network, because people they're hooking their Kindle Fires into their ActiveSync from at home, so having security around your network isn't going to do crap. And the other problem is that data in Exchange or in the mail client on mobile devices is often specifically more vulnerable than data that's isolated in other applications, because there are other applications that have a tendency to reach into Exchange or to grab contacts from the contact list, because that email client is sort of special in that it shares those contacts with other applications in the operating system in general.
Yeah, and there's you don't have to worry about whether you have to have remote wipe access or anything, because you just say, you know, this device is no longer able to access our stuff, and that's it.
Right. So, and then you have more granular and fine control over that when you are watching the traffic enough to know which devices are jailbroken or whatever.
Yeah, so that's why that kind of a thing's exciting, and that's why these kinds of technologies here are what's going to replace MDM, I think, in the future. But there will be, for a long time, people doing things the old way, companies selling products to enable companies, other companies to do things the old way. I think I called it in our thing, like our device management death throes. Is going to be acquiring these companies that specifically care about the devices, and the users are
going
to rebel.
They'll be going on just as long as Windows desktop death throes.
Well, and you mentioned land desk, and I'm like, whoa, they're still around. So that's it's the same version for devices. Okay, and you guys, so you're this is a big topic of your show Thursday, or your show in general, Jack, right?
Yes.
And Jack, you've got a book on MDM that you're starting to you're in the early stages of putting together that book.
Yeah, so my book right now is a 2-page outline and a big pile of tiny slips of paper that I used to make that outline.
And a glint in your eye.
Yeah.
So we've got just a minute left quickly for our calendar for this week. I am in San Francisco all week this week with no public events, so that's pretty awesome. Gabe, you've got a couple events coming up this week, I think, in Toronto.
Next week. Yeah, next week.
I'll be doing,
if we have a show next week, I'll be doing it from Toronto.
Cool. And you're in Toronto speaking, and you're also speaking in?
Charlotte.
Charlotte.
Yep. So yeah, it's a lot of flying around and waiting for evening events to happen, but it should be fun. So I haven't been to Canada since they required a passport.
Toronto's actually kind of a cool city.
I've got a day and a half there, will find out.
And so,
I guess real quick too, Eric, what can we? You had mentioned your broker and stuff, but what website can people go to?
People can look at our website, www.dynamics.com, and you see Dynamics pronounced in the chat box. And what we wanted to add is in the last 6 months that we are doing huge business with our desk, with our portal, we sold 1.6 million licenses worldwide. So that's tremendously fast growing in the past 6 months. And every single company that has bought our portal is having the same problem. We want to allow our end users to use their own personal devices. If it's a smartphone or a tablet, we don't care, but we don't want to manage it. So we provide them with a portal so that the end user can touch his desktop applications and data. And we allow the administrators or the company security agent to disallow downloading data to certain devices through our web portal, and it's completely Active Directory integrated. So you got all the tools to prevent your end users or allow your end users to do what they need to do or what you want them to do. And I was also looking in the chat box at the people saying that on an iPad you can't do your work correctly. And I'm disagreeing with that because I'm using my iPad with a Bluetooth keyboard. And I'm also using a small pocket beamer, a Pico beamer, and I'm really happy with that. The only thing I miss is a mouse. But
and more,
that's a difference.
And more
Pico
than the
beamer is a projector.
It's a Pico beamer.
It's a projector. Project on a wall or.
And so the only thing you miss is a mouse and working
multitasking.
And working in daylight.
No, got multitasking because our portal facilitates multitasking between applications or it facilitates the Windows desktop. So I'm working on a Windows desktop on my iPad. And when I'm traveling home, I want to use it for myself, I close the desktop and I start my game or I start my Outlook. And everybody says, you can't create Word documents on an iPad. Everybody wants an iPad because you can easily read your mail and send mails. That's almost the same thing.
Yeah, and so we'll talk about this next week. All you need is your iPad and your Pico Beamer and the charger for the Pico Beamer and the charger for the iPad and the keyboard and the batteries for the keyboard and all that, and you have a desktop in your pocket. Perfect. Look, final notes. Final notes.
So final notes. So we were just getting to, I'm going to be at MMS next week, Microsoft Management Summit. Right after the keynote, I should be able to jump into the show on the phone. And Consumerization Nation with Colin Steele and myself, Thursday, April 12th, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern.
So on that note, thank you all today for dealing with our audio hilarities. And thanks for Justin for dealing with that stuff also. Eric Westhoven from... I deleted what city you were calling
from. Say Amsterdam. Say the Netherlands.
200 clicks.
From 200 kilometers away from Amsterdam.
Yeah.
It's Maastricht, and that's where we signed the Euro treatment a couple of years ago. So that's where every European guy was screwed with the Euro.
Sorry for that. So, Eric, thank you so much for joining. Gabe, as always, thank you so much. Jack, thank you so much. Mike Katoya, if you're out there, thank you for showing us that Mike Tyson tweeted you. That's pretty badass. And again, all of you, thank you for listening. Hear Jack on Thursday at the same time and hear us back here next Tuesday, same time. Thanks.
Bye.